Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. Today is Horticulture Day. I'm Charity Nebbe. Daffodils are one of the brightest and most cheerful harbingers of spring. They come in many varieties and can bring some early spring color to almost any landscape. And now, and the next few weeks, is the time to plant them. With me today to talk about daffodils and other tried and true spring bulbs, Cindy Haynes, professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
And Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist. Hello, Aaron.
Hello.
And Aaron, you are on record as saying that the daffodil is your favorite spring blooming bulb, which is, that's a little out of character for you to claim an absolute favorite plant in any category.
Oh,
this
it's
must be
true.
Powerful.
Well, I like other spring bulbs too, but if forced to decide, I do love daffodils. I love how early they come up in the spring. I love their cheery yellow flowers. I love how durable they are. They're easy to grow. They're easy to find. The deer don't eat them. The rabbits don't eat them. The chipmunks don't dig them up, which we can't say about all spring bulbs planted in the fall. So it's just a wonderful plant to have around. So
yeah, well, and talk a little bit about their durability, because that is something that sets them apart.
Yeah. So mini bulbs are fairly straightforward to grow. Plant them in the month of October, kind of let them do their thing. And daffodils are some of those that are just one of the easier ones. And I think one of the reasons why that is because of their resistance to damage from other, like deer and rabbits. So tulip, another very popular and lovely spring bulb, is like candy for deer. And it only takes one bite for that flower to be gone in the spring. And so that the fact that nothing bothers them, that they come up reliably year after year, they slowly naturalize in your garden, getting bigger and bigger each year. It just makes it such a nice addition. And they bloom a little bit earlier than some of the other bulbs. So you get a chance, like they are a harbinger of spring in many ways that way. So it's nice. It's just a nice, cheery thing to see in the spring.
Well, and Cindy, I know you also love them, so I'll mm-hmm. give you the opportunity to sing their praises as well.
I love them when they're in bloom because they're this bright golden color and you're really welcoming them. And there's lots of different sizes, so I can have some little tiny ones for my rock garden. I can have some, you know, jonquil types with nice fragrance in the spring, so I can bring them in as a cut flower. And then there's these big, bold ones that you can have, like Aaron said, that nothing bothers. So when they're in bloom, there's nothing like them. They're absolutely fantastic. And I'm daffy for daffodils, just like Aaron is. But I hate them when the foliage is... When the flowers are gone.
Okay.
And the foliage is hanging on for another month because I just don't know what to do with that. Foliage. It's hard to cover mm-hmm. it up.
Well, and so that brings up an interesting point because, daffodils, we've always loved them, but they also kind of go in and out of fashion. And there was mm-hmm. a big movement several years ago, probably 15 years ago, it feels like, where everybody was like, let's naturalize our whole yard or naturalize a whole hillside with daffodils. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful, but then you can't mow, right? So you really need to put that in a place where you're not going to mow.
Right. That foliage is so important for the bulb. It's photosynthesizing. It's what's making that stored food for it to do well next year. So it's really important that we don't disturb it, that we don't braid it, that we don't tie it up, that we don't do any of those things until it yellows. And it will do this, you know, it will be green and it might be even floppy and green for a month after bloom. So you do need to locate these bulbs very carefully. Maybe near some warm season grasses or in beds where other perennials will kind of cover it up. Your lawn probably isn't the best place because it is going to delay you mowing unless you want to sacrifice the bulbs and plant new daffodils every year or every couple of years.
Well, and Aaron, you just ordered 100 daffodil bulbs. So do you plant every year?
I am always adding to my kind of bulb collection at home. Every year I'll put in a few, and it just kind of grows and grows. And daffodils are one of my favorites, so that there's typically daffodils are in the mix. But every once in a while, I'll find something else that I enjoy. Snowdrops or crocus.
Or allium.
Alliums and winter aconite and some of these others that are just nice. So every fall, I'm adding a little bit of something bulb-wise to my garden. And then in the spring, I know I planted them, but I'm always just a little surprised when they come up and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. I put those there. What a great thing to walk out and see.
Good job, Past Aaron.
Yes.
So, all right, daffodils are durable. They're going to come up year after year. They're just going to get better for a long time. Some of the other reliable spring blooming bulbs don't do that. And we talk about tulips all the time because tulips don't, I mean, they in my yard, some of them do come up. I've got kind of a hodgepodge of tulips, you know, that I've planted over the years because I don't remove the old bulbs. But Aaron, I know that in more formal planting, people do treat tulips as annuals, right?
They do. So when you go to Pella or Orange City, they are replacing those bulbs every fall for bloom in the spring because most hybrid tulips, the big kind of colorful tulips that we think of or a kindergartner would draw if you asked them to draw a tulip, those plants aren't reliable perennials. They usually do really well the first year. They'll do fine the second year. Then the third year, they start to get really thin. And then the fourth year, you're kind of like, where did they all go? So they're not terribly reliable. So they often are treated as annuals in those settings. In home landscapes, if you site them nicely, it's okay if a few of them don't come up the second year and a few more the third year. And then you can kind of replace them or think about something new in that location following years.
All right. And Cindy, you just threw out a bunch of other spring blooming bulbs. What are the other spring blooming bulbs that just come up year after year after year reliably?
Yeah, some things to consider as well as daffodils or crocus are nice ones. They come up very early every year. Squill, grape hyacinth come up and usually bloom year after year. Squill does naturalize. It's something you should know. So it spreads
and
a little bit.
When you say squill, are you talking about Siberian squill or are there different varieties of squill?
Yeah, the Siberian squill. So the blue and the white, yeah, Siberian
which
squill.
Which is increasingly, right, and increasingly getting added to invasive lists. So
Right.
Be sure about it.
Right. For the month that it's there, that it's blooming and has foliage, it's amazing in bloom, and then it's gone. So... or at least you don't see it anymore. Other things to think about, too, are ornamental onions. Those are really nice as well. And there's big ones. There's small ones. There's some that bloom early. There's even some that bloom a little bit later. So they're kind of fun and a little bit different because they're like a lollipop. They're this purple ball on a stick, which is kind of a fun thing.
And we call them allium, too, right?
We call them allium or ornamental onion.
All right.
So those are some of the things I would think about. There's some weird ones out there, too. Fritillarias. There's one called Crown Imperial or Fritillaria. It's very skunky, stinks. It smells really bad. It's also called Crown Imperial. So it's got this little crown of leaves on top of this ring of orange or yellow flowers. Really cool looking. And because it stinks, nothing bothers it as well. I mean, it smells.
You may not want it
in
a cut bouquet,
you're not using that as a bouquet, and you're not putting it right next to your front door. But you're putting it somewhere in your landscape that it can attract a lot of attention. So, and maybe protect those tulips or other things that deer and squirrel might be eating.
So many good ideas. Cindy Haynes, professor of horticulture at Iowa State University, and Aaron Style, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist. For more gardening information and tips, please subscribe to our Garden Variety newsletter. Find out more at iowapublicradio.org/garden. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com. This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including Above and Beyond Cancer.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Cindy Haynes, Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. They're here to answer your questions. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And of course, you can ask questions about spring blooming bulbs, but you can also ask questions about all of the other things that you'd like to grow or grow better. The number again, 866-780-9100. And I want to start with a bulb question from Meredith in Mount Vernon. Cindy, you mentioned this. She says, my grandmother taught me to braid the daffodil and tulip leaves once the blossoms are gone. I braid the leaves and then wrap them around and tuck them down, almost like putting hair in a bun, and it stays tucked down near the ground. The leaves still get the sun needed to feed the bulbs, but my beds look tidy and ready for the plants that come in later in the spring. And I understand the appeal of that, but Cindy, you don't feel like that works as well.
I don't. And I blame Martha Stewart for this one. So it's probably not just someone's grandmother. It is a very neat and tidy look. And it can be, and those leaves still photosynthesize, but there's a lot that it's missing because it's not exposed to the sun. So I might challenge Meredith just to, on half of that bed, not braid the foliage, make it and deal with it being a little less tidy, and see if those daffodils perform better. Daffodils are tough and durable, and they can take it. But I tell my students that if you're spending this much time braiding daffodil foliage, come see me. I can find something much more important for you to do because it takes a lot of time to make it look that neat and tidy. And so there are other things that you could be doing that probably are better benefits for those bulbs or the other plants in your garden.
All right. Obviously, Meredith, if it's working for you, you can keep on doing it. But
I agree. All right. Well, it's a nice connection to a grandmother, too.
Absolutely.
So that's a fun thing, too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones. Bob is on the line in Carlisle. Hi, Bob.
Hello, Charity. I have a question regarding carrying over a native plant, not all native plants, but a couple of plants in particular. The plant I'm concerned about is the cardinal flower and also the catch fly. I planted both of these in my bog this year, and they hardly showed any growth at all. So that's something I should be giving a lot of protection to, or maybe digging up and potting it up and bringing it out again next spring.
I would not be digging those up and bringing them out. I think that some of these, like I know the lobelia or the cardinal flower, they do take a couple of years to kind of get established. So making sure that they're well watered or have enough sun and just kind of being patient with them might be the best thing that you can do. Another thing, if you planted them later in the season, did you plant them in the spring or did you plant them later in summer?
I probably plant them late spring.
Okay, late spring. Good. So they have enough time to kind of establish a good root system. So that's good. Sometimes I find when some perennials are planted later in summer, the root system isn't as well established. So I tell people to mulch them heavily just to prevent them from heaving or lifting during the summer, because a lot of these plants have very shallow root systems, at least initially. These sound like they were planted early enough that they probably have a good established root system. So I would just be...
But would it maybe be a good idea maybe just to mulch them just in case we have a really cold winter?
Sure. You can do that. Certainly not going to hurt. My guess is they're probably a little bit slower this first year because in parts of Iowa it was dry at certain times, even though they were planted in a kind of a boggy situation. And just be patient with them and see how they respond next spring.
Bob, thanks so much for the call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Lori's up next in Iowa City. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I'm wondering about calla lilies. I always put my amaryllis bulbs out in the spring, let them photosynthesize and make the bulb bigger, and pot them up in the fall, give them about 3 to 4 months of dormancy, and let the leaves dry. Do I do the same thing with calla lilies? Also, the other question is...
You can go one at a time. Aaron, you can answer that question first, and then Lori, you can ask your second question.
Yeah, okay. No, you can. Actually, treating calla lily much in that same kind of pattern that you've treated your amaryllis works really well.
Okay. They also have seeds in the little pods from the blossoms. Mm. Do they grow from seeds, or is that a really slow process?
It is going to be a slower process, but that will be a fun little project to start on, I think. I would imagine the seeds would, I'd have to do a little bit of research, but I think they probably need some stratification.
If it is, it's not too much.
Right.
But yeah, that would be a fun one to try.
It would
see what
be.
You get.
And you'll get something that looks similar to the parent, but it won't be exactly the same. And it'll probably be at least 3 years before you see flowers, maybe even a little bit longer. But it's a fun project to embark on.
So what's stratify mean?
Oh, I'm sorry. The stratification is a cold treatment. So often we can do this. One of the best ways to give seeds a cold treatment is to mix them maybe in some damp sand or something like that, and then put them in a refrigerator that's about the right temperature. You just have to watch the moisture level when you do that, because if it's too wet and fungus starts to grow, that can be problematic.
Right.
And then if it dries out completely, then those little germinating seeds could potentially do that too. So that would be one way you could do that. You could also just pot them up in a little bit of potting soil and stratify them that way. That's one option.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was really helpful.
Thanks so much for the call, Lori. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Aline is on the line in Newton. Hello.
Hello. I was also wondering about amaryllis bulbs. I have kept the main bulb for 2 years. It blooms, and then in the spring I put it out. But this past year, I potted up the baby ones. Now, I understand for the baby ones, it will take at least 3 years before they bulb, before they bloom. But my question is, do I need to let those baby ones, can I leave them potted up and just have them in the house, or do I need to let them go dormant for a period of time?
I usually would treat them the same way that you're treating your other amaryllis. So they're going to want to go through a dormancy period. Amaryllis is a little different because of where it's from, South African. I think that might be South American. Anyway,
right.
Where it's from, its dormancy is induced by drought instead of cold temperatures. And so it still likes to go through that cycle. Letting it dry down and die back, just like you have with the more mature amaryllis bulbs, is still helpful for these that are developing and then kind of going through that same process. And then once the bulb gets large enough, it'll bloom for you.
Okay. When I let them dry out, can I leave them in the pot in the soil, or do I need to pull it out of the pot?
You can do either. A little bit of personal preference for gardeners. Some gardeners really like to just leave them in the pot, let them be. Others like to pull them out and store them in a mesh bag or a little bit of damp sphagnum moss, and that works well for them. Other gardeners look at that and go, that's more work. I'm just leaving mine in the pot. So either is fine. I leave mine in the pot, if that helps you.
Me too. I'm kind of lazy that way.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for the call. And we've got a couple lines open for you right now, 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And of course, a lot of people treat amaryllis bulbs like they are disposable. It's quite a bit of work to get them to bloom again, isn't it?
It is. It's not the easiest thing to do because they do need, once again, that foliage needs to photosynthesize and it needs to be very healthy before it'll bloom again. It has this kind of dormancy period as well. I would like to say that the bulb is judging you a little bit because the better you treat that bulb during the growing period and during the dormancy, then it determines how many flowers or if it's going to flower for you. So you learn really quickly how good you are with amaryllis and if you can do this again and again and again, or if you're not very good like me because I forget to fertilize or I forget to water at some point. And then I just buy new ones every year and let someone else do all the work.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Michelle is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Michelle.
Hi there. Hey, we landscaped with rock around some established peonies, and now I'm worried that the rock's going to keep the ground too warm over the winter. So should I pull the rock away when I cut the peonies back?
You shouldn't have to. The thing I worry about with peonies is they don't like to be planted too deeply. And so it depends on how much rock is there. If it's just inch of rock, quite a bit. Okay. So if it was just an inch of rock.
They put in pretty big rock.
Okay. Then I probably would remove some of this away from the base of the plant. If peonies are planted too deeply, you get beautiful foliage and no flowers. I wouldn't worry as much about the heat from the rock, because peonies are tough enough and it's not going to prevent them from acclimating for winter, and they're hardy enough. I just worry about that layer of rock. If it's more than an inch or two, then it could be an issue in getting them to bloom well for you next year.
I will pull it away. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for the call, Michelle. Fun. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Here's a question from Tara in Dubuque. Help, we just discovered we have grubs. We thought the dry grass was due to lack of rain, but now something is digging up our yard to get after the grubs. Is there anything we can do to treat grubs late in the season, and how should we repair the significant damage?
Oh, we were just talking about this.
We were just talking about this. I think a lot of folks have been seeing this across the state. It's likely raccoons or skunks. They cause similar damage. They're after the same thing. Sometimes they're after grubs. And if you have a pretty significant grub population, so more than if you pull up like a little square, a foot by foot square of turf, and there's more than five grubs that you can see, then you do have something that might be worth treating. If there's one or two in there, not something worth treating. Because those raccoons and skunks are also after things like earthworms and other insects that are in the soil. So it could be grubs. It could be some of those other things too. Unfortunately, we're right on the kind of the end of the effective time period for treating for grubs. Typically, we want to do that in August, maybe early September. That's typically one of the better times. Or as a preventative in June and July. Like those are kind of the times that we deal with grubs. At this late in the season, if you put down grub control, you're probably not going to get the control that you're really looking for. And then you spent time, money, and put down chemical that isn't very helpful. To help with the skunks or the raccoons in digging, your best option is exclusion. So there's a couple ways you could do this. You could roll out a chicken wire fence, hardware cloth, even bird netting over the area that they're causing a lot of damage to physically keep them from digging in the area. Pin it down with staples or put bricks on the corners or something like that to hold it in place. It's only for a couple of week period that this is probably going to be super problematic. So that's one of probably the easiest way that doesn't involve any chemicals or anything like that. But you do have a lot of time invested in rolling out all this fencing. Another option would be to use a scent deterrent. Both Cindy and I were talking earlier. I'm never as satisfied of the results from a scent deterrent as I wish I would be.
Well, it washes away in the rain.
It can wash away in the rain. It loses effective over time. You can use something like coyote urine, which would deter them from coming to the area. Or you could use something that has kind of a poor taste or a really strong odor, like a castor oil-based product. That kind of almost covers up the smell of the little grubs and worms and everything that they're going after, so it can help reduce that. Raccoons tend to peel the sod back, so if you see like little flaps of grass, flip them back over like you're replacing the divot at the golf course. That will help. And then you can kind of smooth out the area. And now is a good time to overseed if you wanted to kind of start new grass in the area and repair the damage that came. They can cause significant damage. In like 2 nights, they can cause significant damage. So it is frustrating.
We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Cindy Haynes, professor of horticulture at Iowa State University, and Aaron Style, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist. This is Horticulture Day from Talk of Iowa from IPR News.
This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including Above and Beyond Cancer.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Horticulture Day today. And with me, Cindy Haynes, professor of horticulture at Iowa State University, and Aaron Style, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist. They are here to answer your questions. So you can call us at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we've got a question from Wayne in Princeton, Missouri. He wanted to know if planting jalapeno peppers and bell peppers next to each other or near each other would affect the taste.
No.
All right.
No, it won't this year because the fruit that are produced, the jalapeno peppers are going to be jalapeno peppers. The bell peppers are going to be sweet bell peppers. They might have cross-pollinated or hybridized. So if you were to germinate the seed from those bell peppers or the seed from those jalapeno peppers and then grow them next year with some cultivars, usually hybrids don't produce a lot of viable seed, but with some cultivars, you might alter the taste of those next generation of peppers. So you could have hotter bell peppers or sweeter jalapeno peppers. So, but this year, no worries. They can be right next to each other. Eat, you know, all the hot peppers. They're all going to be hot, and all the bell peppers are going to be sweet.
Okay, great. And if you really love those varieties, you should probably purchase new seeds then.
Yeah, and if they're hybrids, yes, that's the one way to reliably get that jalapeno or that level of heat or that level of sweet every year. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go to the phones. Lori is on the line in Lisbon. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I have a few questions about milkweed and calancho. My milkweed is sort of spread all over my 6 acres. Most of it is in very inconvenient places, and I've been kind of hand mowing around it all summer. And I'm wondering if I can collect seed pods, do something with them, and then put them where I would like them to be next summer. And the same for my calancho.
So with the milkweed, you can do that. And actually, I would sow the seed this fall. So I would collect the seed and sow the seed where you would like to see it this fall. They're also perennial, so you could dig up that root mass and just move it to a new location as well. Those are two options. If I were going to transplant it, I would do the transplanting ideally as it first emerges in the spring. You could probably do it now. They're pretty tough plants, so they would probably be okay if you did it now too.
Okay. Is it the same for the calancho?
So is this a like an indoor kind of flowering plant, right?
No, it's actually,
I want to make sure we're talking about the same plant.
I kind of question what I'm calling it. It was purchased for outdoors. I've had it a number of years. It kind of spreads in this very messy little garden I've had it in, but it looks very sad. And I thought if I could get it to come up, it has a beautiful orange flower, much like the one indoors, and has a narrow leaf. And sometimes I see the butterflies preferring it to the milkweed.
Yeah, I'm wondering if this is a tall sedum, like an Autumn Joy type sedum.
Maybe, yeah.
Because it would be similar to what you're describing. Although they don't tend to spread like you. That's the only thing that kind of threw me off a little bit. But
yeah, I think the only way this spreads, I think, is when it drops seeds. you know, when it
okay
drops seeds, and you and it's sad because there'll be like a skinny little stick of it here and a skinny little stick of it there.
Yeah.
Now I have a seed pod in the house that I'm looking at.
Okay. If it is the tall sedum, this is another one that you would probably move in the spring if you wanted to move it, just as it's emerging out of the ground. If you did it now, it wouldn't have as much time to get established before winter, and you might see some die back or some die out because of that. So first thing in spring, as soon as it pokes a little bud, a little leaves above the ground, looks like a little like head, I don't know, look like a little, not like a little head of cabbage, but
broccoli.
A little broccoli head that's coming up out of the ground. You can dig it up. That would be when you would divide it if you wanted to as well, and then put it in a new location. Full sun, if it's tall sedum, mm-hmm. full blazing well, sun.
And even calancho. I mean, even mm-hmm. if it's a houseplant, they love the more sun, the better.
Yep.
Okay, because, this is sad. Divide. Yes, there wouldn't be enough to divide. But again, just pops, little pops, and I think it's where the seeds have landed in past years. So, okay. All righty. I will get out there and pick me some milkweed pods as soon as they're dry.
Great. Lori, thank you so much for the call. 866-780-9100. Megan's up next in Fort Dodge. Hi, Megan.
Hi.
What's your question?
I'm sure somebody has already asked this before, but I have new to me tea roses in a garden bed, and I think they're all tea roses, and I have never planted roses because I don't know how to take care of them in the winter, and so I need some recommendations.
Yeah, overwintering hybrid tea roses can be an issue. If they're older kind of hybrid tea roses, there is some care that you need to go through. We want to protect the base of them, that kind of foot at the bottom. That's where it's been grafted. And that's the cultivar of interest. That's what produces those beautiful flowers. So later in the fall, usually we do this around Thanksgiving or sometime in November, you're just going to mound a bunch of soil or compost around the base, about a foot of it, and kind of create this kind of pyramid at the base. And then maybe you can put another couple of feet of straw on top of that. And then at Ryman Gardens, they used to do this where they would tie them all up and then put the compost at the base or the soil at the base and then straw on top of that, and they'd fence it off from all the rabbits. But as long as you've got that foot of compost or soil at the base, you're protecting that lower portion, and depending on the winter, I don't cut back this time of year. I wait until spring and see how much survives, and you're going to know that what's in that compost or that underneath the straw and compost is probably going to survive unless it's super cold. And then in March, you're starting to remove those layers and starting that fertilization and pruning and process again in the spring. So it's a little work in November, but it's also a really good way to make sure that you get them safely overwintered without using those styrofoam rose cones that, in my opinion, start to fly everywhere unless you kind of weight them down. Yeah.
Anti-rose cone. That's been an ongoing theme on Hort Day for many years.
And I've been very opinionated today, and I apologize. But
no,
those rose cones, you have to prune them, and they get really hot underneath. And if you don't weight them down, one strong winter wind, and they're flying across your yard, your neighbor's yard, and into the next county sometimes.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call, Megan. Let's go to Mark in somewhere in Wisconsin. Hi, Mark.
Hello. I have 25 fruit trees in my backyard, and I have a beehive come in the spring and pollinate my trees. I have a full-size plum tree, and it has a tremendous amount of bark and a tremendous amount of blossoms, but I might get 5 to 7 plums a year. Now, why are my plums not being fertilized and or growing? Or how do I trim the tree different to convince it to bear fruit?
Yeah, I'm thinking that if you're getting good bloom, and obviously you're getting pretty decent pollination, almost all fruit trees, even the ones that are self-compatible, fruit better when they have another cultivar nearby. And I don't know if you have more than one variety of plum in the area, but planting a different variety
apples.
Might help.
Go on, Mark.
17 apples and 5 cherries and 3 plums, all in a 100-yard by 100-yard orchard.
And so, are they all the same kind of plum, Mark?
No, 5 different plums. There's Stanley plum prune. There's a Fuji. There's a golden yellow. There's a California one. But that one just kind of refuses to bear fruit. I've tried a short haircut, and I've tried a long haircut, but, you know, I haven't succeeded in convincing it to have plums. And the plums are very good. That's the frustration.
Yeah.
The plums it has are very good.
So if there's kind of 3 things we typically look at when we're getting very poor fruit set. One is pollination, which you seem like you have covered. One is compatibility or a pollination partner, that kind of thing. The last thing that typically impacts this is cold damage. Mm-hmm. So plums and peaches and some of those others bloom earlier than apples and pears, and they're much more prone to seeing cold damage. Sometimes it doesn't even kill the flowers. It only kills the pistils and the stamens in the center of the flower, which are, of course, very important to that fruit production, too. So, and it could be a little bit of all of those things, potentially, right? And so... it may not just be one factor that's causing this trouble. It may not have the best pollination partners, although they're adequate, but then you layer on top of that a later cold snap, and you just get really bad fruit set. And plums and peaches and nectarines and apricots, all of those in northern Iowa are very difficult to grow. I'm sure, especially as you get closer to the Great Lakes in Wisconsin, you probably have more success, but depending on where you're at in the state, they could also be challenging for that reason.
Mark, thanks so much for the call, and good luck with that. Let's try to squeeze in one more question from Bonnie in Cedar Falls. I have a 3 to 4 foot potted hibiscus tree that I'd like to bring in for the winter. What do I need to know? Our condo has east and west windows in addition to 2 skylights.
So you're going to pull that in fairly quickly before any kind of frost. I would put it in that western window. I'd give it as much light as it possibly can. Before you pull it in, I would also check for insects, because it's a whole lot easier to spray, even with soapy water, outside before you bring it inside, because white flies love hibiscus.
Mm-hmm. Aphids do, too.
Aphids, almost everything does. So wash it well, bring it in, put it in that sunny western window. And don't be disappointed when it loses a few leaves and looks a little bare. Just be patient with it. It will survive the winter until you can get it out.
All right. We are out of time.
It may lose all of its leaves, too. So.
All right. We're out of time. But Cindy Haynes and Aaron Style, thank you both so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks.